Farming is big business in Wisconsin. We're home to 68,500 farms, just north of 8,000 registered dairy herds. Who is milking the cows? We know that immigrant employees on dairy farms produce the vast majority of the American milk supply. The cereal we pour, the milk we pour in our cereal this morning, that hits home. We're talking about the migrant dairy worker, their story this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's bring in Julie Keller now. She's an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Rhode Island in Kingston. Her new book is called Milking in the Shadows, Migrants and Mobility in America's Dairyland. Julie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
You've spent a lot of time with migrant workers. You tallied it up for us. You interviewed 60 migrant dairy workers from Mexico, about half who are working on farms in Wisconsin and Minnesota. And a lot of your on-the-ground interviews were during the previous Obama administration, so there was follow-up for you to do with the shifts in border immigration enforcement and policy. So as a sociologist, what draws you to study and chronicle the experience of the migrant worker, and particularly those who went to work on dairy farms here in Wisconsin?
Sure. It's such an interesting question. So back when I was a graduate student at the University of Wisconsin in the Department of Sociology, I was pursuing my PhD, and I was looking for a topic. You know, I was just keeping my eyes open, trying to decide, okay, you know, which topic of concern, what kind of social problem am I going to dig my heels in and study and really get my hands dirty for a number of years, right? So I wanted to be sure that I would choose a topic that would really keep my interest. And one of my professors, one of the professors in the Department of Community and Environmental Sociology, was just beginning to study this issue. And so I thought, what a wonderful opportunity to chat with her and to learn about, you know, what other research can be done on this population.
How would you define a migrant worker? Are there always, you know, are they always undocumented immigrants, or what is the clear definition here?
So I tend to go back and forth, you know, between using the term migrant worker and immigrant worker when I speak about dairy workers who are coming from Mexico. And the reason I do that is because their pattern of movement is really a back and forth one. So if you ask immigrant workers on dairy farms in Wisconsin, you know, how long do you plan to be here? When are you going to head back to Mexico, if ever? Most of the people I talked with said, I plan to be here for 3 or 4 years. I want to head back to Mexico, build my house, invest in some property, create a business, and then I want to head back up to Wisconsin to work for another 2, 3, or 4 more years. So that's why I kind of use those terms, you know, a little bit loosely throughout my book. Sometimes I say migrant, referring to that back and forth, those back and forth travels. Sometimes I say immigrants, because on occasion I would talk to someone who had spent a number of years in Wisconsin. I spoke with a gentleman who spent 12 years in Wisconsin without any returns back home.
But there is no clear visa, year-round visa, you can get to be able to work on a dairy farm and do this work.
Absolutely. So the visa that we tend to think about when we think about agricultural workers who are coming from abroad to fill a demand, to fill a need that farmers are requiring, is the H-2A temporary agricultural visa. And this visa allows for folks to come for a specified amount of time to fill seasonal needs. Now, dairy work isn't seasonal, right? Because those cows do have to be milked 365 days a year.
The people you interviewed really stuck with me, and particularly Urico, who said, life is beautiful here, but you suffer. He said, you suffer. Do some of these interviews really haunt you?
Absolutely. You know, that quote by Yuriko is absolutely characteristic of some of the stories I heard about from workers. You know, they're painting the good alongside the bad. You know, many workers characterized you know, this sense of loss, whether they are in Mexico without a job but with their family, or whether they are up in Wisconsin, you know, really yearning to be home in Mexico. They have the job, but they don't have those kinship networks. They don't have that sense of rootedness, you know, from that from living in the village that they miss so much. So that's what really stands out in a lot of these interviews, is this incompleteness that migrants would talk to me about.
Julie Keller is with us. She's an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Rhode Island in Kingston. Her new book is called Milking in the Shadows, Migrants and Mobility in America's Dairyland. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you an immigrant that's found a good, solid job on a farm here in Wisconsin? What has your experience been like? What are the pros and cons? Are you a farmer who relies on migrant workers to remain viable? Tell us how that works. What's something you wish people appreciated or understood about the workers you employ? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Julie, how much of the dairy industry is reliant on this type of labor? And do these workers understand just how crucial they are?
Absolutely. So back in 2008, my then advisor, Jill Harrison, at the University of Wisconsin, she conducted a survey, a very impressive survey back then, with a couple of other colleagues. And she surveyed hundreds of hired workers in the dairy industry on dairy farms in Wisconsin. And she surveyed these workers, and she found that through her research, she came up with an estimate that immigrant workers make up over 40% of all hired dairy farm workers. That was back in 2008. And she also found that 89% of immigrant workers were coming from Mexico. So we're talking big numbers here, right? The reliance on immigrant workers and dairy is huge, and it's huge for our economy of the state of Wisconsin, for Wisconsin's economy. I actually just spoke with a worker, immigrant worker, yesterday, and he told me that, you know, Americans need to understand that these workers are critical, right? And they're critical not just to keep dairy farms running, but they're critical to keep local economies running. Think about all of the different ways in which communities depend on that economic vitality of dairy farms in their areas.
What type of jobs, what type of work are they doing on the dairy farm? We know the milking of the cows, but what does a typical day look like?
Sure. So depending on what shift they're working, the day is going to look different. But a pretty typical breakdown that I saw was, let's say a farm is milking 300 cows. They might have two different teams of workers to split the labor required for milking the cows three times a day. So you might have two workers waking up to start a 3 a.m. Shift milking the cows, and then you would have another team of workers that's going to milk an evening shift at about 6 p.m., and then each set of workers will take turns day by day milking that midday shift of around noon. And so, you know, in that instance, workers don't really have a day off because every day somebody has to milk the cows.
Talking with sociologist Julie Keller, who stays with us. Her new book is called Milking in the Shadows, Migrants and Mobility in America's Dairyland. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think about immigrants working on dairy farms? Do you have experience with this? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Two decades ago, there was a major shift in labor on Wisconsin and Minnesota dairy farms. For generations, Julie Keller writes, dairy farmers relied on family members and local European American hired hands to milk the cows and do other physical labor. But in the late 90s, the workers started to be replaced with immigrants from Mexico. And Julie Keller has interviewed dozens of migrant dairy farm workers for her new book. It's called Milking in the Shadows. She's a sociology professor at University of Rhode Island in Kingston, and you can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think about when you pour the milk on your cereal, who is the laborer behind that milk? Have you experienced a dairy farm here in Wisconsin and the work of migrants doing the milking? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Julie, you interviewed these workers mostly in their homes on these farms, and these interviews were in Spanish. Did you feel that they felt comfortable opening up to you and that you weren't going to expose them?
It's such a good question, and that was a concern of mine that I had that was just ongoing, and it was really something I thought about with every interaction. So one thing that helped me logistically is that I decided to do the Mexico portion of my field work first. So I spent 6 months in Mexico interviewing workers who had, in the past, worked on Wisconsin and a little bit of Minnesota dairy farms. The reason why that helped me to gain confidence and trust when I got to Wisconsin is that I was able to tell workers, oh, I've been to this village, this other village. I know so-and-so and so-and-so. And so I found that once having told them that I've been to the place where they grew up, where they were born, I've met people that they know, that really helped to develop a sense of trust. But at the same time, it's very important to say that nearly all of the people I spoke with were undocumented during their time in the U.S., and so that creates definitely a lot of vulnerability and sense of fear.
They didn't want to be taped. You really had to just take notes, is that right?
You know, most of them did allow me to tape, actually,
Oh, okay.
And a few of them were hesitant about me using the tape recorder. So in those instances, I took down as many notes as I could, right, as we're talking and they're sharing their story and I'm just jotting things down very quickly. Most of them were definitely open to me using the tape recorder, and I just described very, very carefully and clearly, I will not be sharing your name, your identity with anybody. And that's why I use pseudonyms throughout the book.
Let's go to Keith now, joining us from Beaver Dam. Keith, what are your thoughts here?
Well, I've seen these immigrant workers, and they're very hard workers and very dependable, very reliable. But I think it's helped with create a problem with the tax structure, and the cheap labor has allowed these farms to increase and expand to it's a race to the see how big they can get, and they just keep producing milk in great quantities that we can't consume. So I think I've got nothing against the immigrant. They are very good workers, very reliable, like I said, but it's caused trouble with the farm versus, like you said, with the old family farm where I grew up with, everybody had a big family and that's what you relied on. But so that's the comment I had.
Keith, thank you so much. And looking at more of the economics of the farm growing more massive and outgrowing a family that can actually do the chores and do all the work on the farm. Julie, did you get a sense from these workers that they were getting a fair wage or they had any control over their wage?
It's such a good question. So in my study, I interviewed a total of 60 immigrant workers, and the average wage from that sample size was $7.90. That was back in 2011, 2012, okay? So it was still above the minimum wage, but still among the lowest paid jobs in the state of Wisconsin. I just spoke with a worker yesterday, Jaime, who told me that he's currently paid $9.50. He used to receive bonuses, but now with the price of milk so low, workers are no longer receiving bonuses.
Another thing that struck me as you talked to so many workers was how much preparation and how much planning they have to do, and having plan A and plan B in order to get across the border, in order to get to a dairy farm, in order to even get the money together to be able to get to Wisconsin. What does that plan look like? What are those preparations looking like?
Absolutely. So this was a really fascinating part of my work. You know, I had the privilege of being in Mexico, spending so much time in these villages, and really watching, in some cases, people actually take the steps to prepare for the journey north. And so what that entailed was, first of all, they had to secure some source of money in order to pay a smuggler or a coyote to take them across the border unauthorized, right? And so just that process of getting funding was very complicated. They had to ask for a loan from someone in the community, and in which case they'd have to state, okay, I have something that you can take if I don't return the loan, right? So, you know, I'm signing this contract or a verbal agreement, or maybe I'm asking a family member in the U.S. to wire money back to me so that I can make the crossing. In addition, some people were actually talking on the phone with farmers while they were in their villages, lining up those job opportunities, making sure that there actually will be a position for them once they get across. Then there's the journey itself, which, as we know, is incredibly perilous, very dangerous to make.
And sometimes they make it, sometimes they don't, and then there is a second effort, perhaps a third time they try it. And so it's like this reoccurring thing. Another thing that was interesting about Plan Bs was that if they couldn't get a visa, they could always look to Canada, perhaps, as another option, although wages there were lower.
Sure. So this was something that was just coming up when I returned to these villages in 2017. So Trump had been elected. It was right before the inauguration. And I was able to follow up with a handful of folks from my original study. And I asked them, you know, what are your plans now that Trump has been elected? What are your thoughts? And just a couple of them were beginning to think about possibly going to Canada, that maybe their chances of success would be better if they apply for a temporary visa in Canada. So that was something a couple of people were beginning to talk about, if their sense of the border, if their sense that the border was going to be just impossible or more dangerous to cross, if that was going to be a serious concern of theirs, then maybe they would look to Canada.
Let's bring in Bill now from Cambria. Bill, hi.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good.
Hey, my question is, in the past, I've been around big farms and whatnot. My daughter works for a bigger farm. I grew up on a farm. The immigrants that come across, all they want to do is speak Spanish. They want to teach our kids Spanish. The farmers that own the farms have to go to school and learn Spanish. It seems like in all the acquaintance I've ever found out, they never want to speak English. Their kids do, but the older adults never want to go to school or have a program to get them to speak English so they can get a job more easily.
Bill, thank you for the call. Putting your sociology hat on here, Julie, what about assimilation?
Sure. So that's a really interesting point that the caller brings up. I actually found that in my field work, workers were really interested in learning English. And part of the way that I attempted to try to give back to this group of people, they had given me so much, opened their doors to me, opened their hearts to me. I would ask them, you know, what can I do to try to give back? Would you be interested in learning English? And workers were very interested in learning English. And so I brought in a big whiteboard and a marker and asked them, okay, what do you want to know, right? So on some of these farms, I was giving these English lessons. And people would bring out their notebooks and be writing notes, you know. And what did they want to know about? They wanted to know how to communicate with their boss. They wanted to know, how do I tell my boss when a cow has fallen down? How can I explain that in English, right? Mm. So I actually found that workers were very, very eager, did very much want to learn English.
Sociologist Julie Keller shines a light on the work that happens before someone actually crosses the border between Mexico and the U.S. Money must be secured, job connections must be arranged, and then plans. The plans must be made to be smuggled. We're looking at the migrant labor force in the dairy industry here in Wisconsin, in Minnesota, and the work that Julie Keller did to draw out these stories. Her book is Milking in the Shadows, Migrants and Mobility in America's Dairyland. Getting your thoughts, your background on this, 800-642-1234. Where do you come down on immigrant labor on dairy farms? Have you had experience with this? Are you an immigrant that has found a good, solid job on a farm here in Wisconsin? And what's that experience been like? What are the pros? What are the cons? 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation after this news on the Ideas Network. When sociologist Julie Keller did her field work in Wisconsin chronicling the stories of migrant workers on dairy farms, the workers she interviewed here came from 14 different farms. Most of the interviews she conducted with workers took place in their homes where they could safely be away from their bosses. The interviews with workers lasted between 30 minutes and 2 hours and conducted nearly all in Spanish. We're talking with sociologist Julie Keller here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and her new book looks at the labor force on dairy farms here in Wisconsin. It's called Milking in the Shadows. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a farmer who relies on migrant workers to remain viable? Tell us why. What's something you wish people appreciated or understood about the migrant workers you employ? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Julie, did you find that farmers felt conflicted at all about encouraging migrants to cross over the border, go through those dangerous areas to get to their farms to work these jobs?
I really did. I interviewed 8 farmers in addition to the 60 immigrant workers I interviewed. I did find that farmers did express a deep sense of discomfort with the fact that that they have these workers that they're very happy with. On the other hand, look at all of the danger that these workers are exposed to, that these workers are taking on, this burden that they're taking on for the farm and for their own livelihood to get across the border unauthorized. So some farmers did describe that deep sense of discomfort and a kind of, you know, not knowing what to do with that. You know, day in, day out, the cows have to be milked. So, you know, there isn't a whole lot of time for rumination, you know, no pun intended.
Let's go to Jennifer now, joining us from La Crosse. Jennifer, hi.
Good morning. I just have a comment. I am a teacher, a former teacher of both English to Spanish speakers and Spanish to English speakers. And a previous caller had called about how so many people don't learn Spanish or English when they come here. As a teacher, I know how it's a struggle to learn a second language, and oftentimes the immigrant workers are coming with a limited education, and the grammatical structures of the English language are very complicated, so it's hard to make the equivalence and to learn a second language. Also, my students who have tried to learn Spanish oftentimes struggle with that, or even my classmates from high school would say, yeah, I may have studied Spanish for 5 or 6 years, but I don't remember it anymore. So I just wanted to point out that it's very challenging to learn a second language. And then secondly, that if you think about our own, my European ancestors, the first generation often struggled with the language, but it was the second generation that would come and learn English.
Jennifer, thank you so much for those thoughts. Julie, what about that second generation? These workers are having children, and they're growing up in our schools.
Absolutely. So some of the workers in my study did have children in Wisconsin who were born there. They're American citizens, birthright citizenship, and they're bilingual. They're absolutely fluent in both English and Spanish. And I also want to mention that the workers I interviewed are indigenous. So the villages where they come from are indigenous villages. They come from a rich culture, indigenous culture in Veracruz, in these places. And so not only are they learning English, not only are they Spanish speakers trying to learn English, they also have this indigenous language that they have that is part of them, that is really their first language.
How has life in Veracruz changed since villagers began working on farms here and sending money back?
Sure. So a really fascinating moment happened in the field when I was in one of these villages, and I was with one of the workers who had come back to her village, and she had spent 4 years in Wisconsin milking cows, and we were standing in her sister's house, looking out the window at a hillside covered with houses. And she said, "Julie, look at all of those houses that are made with concrete. Look at those houses. Those are all houses that were built by people who went to Wisconsin and milked cows." So it was really profound to see that kind of change, right? Previously, people were using just wood to build their houses, and now you're seeing different kinds of materials being used, more durable materials, and also lots of different businesses popping up because people are using the money that they come back with to invest in these kinds of clothing businesses, auto businesses, and really trying to make a life for themselves.
One of the workers you talked to, Alonso, felt isolation living in Wisconsin because it's hard for him to get around. How about mobility and a driver's license and being able to get off the farm?
Absolutely. This was a really tough issue that workers really struggled with. And so in Wisconsin, you have to show proof of legal residence in order to obtain a driver's license. This law started to become implemented in 2007. So previously, immigrants could have access to licenses, but since 2007, they have not been able to do so. And this has been very difficult because if they have a vehicle and if they're driving around, they are at risk of being pulled over, ticketed, possibly sent to jail. And then that kind of starts the process for the possibility of a deportation down the road.
And certainly any type of violation would go on the record, and trying to perhaps get a visa in the future, that whatever is on the record could perhaps, impede them from getting that visa.
Sure. There are a number of different risks that that workers associated with driving, with being on the roads, to such an extent that it wasn't unheard of for workers to ask me for a ride to different places, either because they had a car and didn't quite feel comfortable driving it, or they just didn't have a vehicle and they needed to go to a clinic, they needed to go to a doctor's appointment, to get groceries, to just lead their lives in a rural space, which, as many people know, really does require a car.
Let's go to Joe now, joining us from Sauk County. Joe, good morning. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I want to dispel some of the negative attitudes here, and I'm coming at it as a person who was frankly displaced from a dairy farm. And I'm talking about the era back in the 90s when the trend was just getting started. Some of my observations are, from a farmer's point of view also, for 30 years now, it's been get big or get out, and we're seeing it. It makes me ill to go to the grocery store and see $2 a gallon of milk. Those are 1980s prices. Another point is that any person working on a dairy farm now is in the future going to be subject to continuing automation. And so I would encourage folks to look at Canadian opportunities, because I think the milk market in there in the future is going to be much more stable. Those are just the comments I wanted to observe. Thanks.
Joe, thanks for bringing those to the table. So depressed milk prices there is one thing, and automation another thing that could really impact the workers.
Sure. So one of the workers I spoke with recently, the first question he had for me was, Julie, do you drink milk? And I said, yes, I do drink milk. And he said, well, you need to be drinking more. Right? We need to have something to do with this oversupply of milk. And so workers are totally aware of this dairy crisis that is profoundly affecting farmers right now, affecting these operations, affecting ways of life, affecting cultures, affecting communities. They're absolutely aware of that. And this worker that I spoke with said, you know, we want to convey all of the concerns that we have as workers, but we also want to tell the world that dairy farmers are hurting too, and we have to have some kind of solution to help both groups.
Did you get a sense that since the Trump administration has really cracked down on the border and the focus is on the border wall, with people in Veracruz, are they planning to return to Wisconsin at all?
So I had, with the handful that I followed up with in 2017, I did have most of that handful telling me I do intend to try to cross the border again to get back to Wisconsin, you know, with a couple telling me if I can't, then maybe I'll look to Canada. But so far that orientation northward, that orientation toward milking cows, toward, earning wages that they could send back to their family, that they could make something of themselves, as they put it. That sort of yearning and that sort of urge does not seem to have disappeared. It's complicated. It's become more complicated with increasing focus on border security, but I didn't find that it's disappeared.
As we wrap up here in the few seconds we have left, where does your research go from here?
So it's a good question. You know, so my book, Milking in the Shadows, just came out this month, and it's really the culmination of many years of work. There are an amazing group of scholars, of activists, organizers, lawyers, who are doing similar work as I am, trying to bring to light the concerns of immigrant dairy workers across the nation. And so I am lucky enough to be forming alliances with these people, working with them, asking them, what can I do to help, and really coming together to publicize this issue that's so important, not just for Wisconsin, but really for the whole nation.
Julie Keller, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Julie Keller is an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Rhode Island in Kingston. Her book is Milking in the Shadows, Migrants and Mobility in America's Dairyland. Coming up, we talk about a Wisconsin-made film that's all over the festival circuit that looks at dairy workers. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In 2017, the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, they co-produced a 21-minute film about immigrant labor on dairy farms. Los Lecheros looks at the growing reliance of our state's dairy industry on undocumented workers. And in the film, we hear from John Rosenau. He owns Rosenholm Dairy. His great-great-grandparents were homesteaders in the mid-1800s. The operation went from 50 head of cattle in John's youth to milking 550 cows today. And when that dairy grew, he had to get help from an immigrant labor force.
If ICE came in here and checked my employees and found that they were undocumented, and those 10 people left, my next option, of course, is to try to find a market for my cows and sell them. And I wouldn't be able to farm anymore. It would just about kill me.
D. Hall is managing editor at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Her organization co-produced this short documentary, Los Lecheros, which is making the rounds at film festivals. D., welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks a lot for having me this morning.
Really profound audio there from this film. And you went into this particular dairy farm and others to really get the stories of these workers. So what did you take away from that experience? What did they tell you?
So this is the second time that the Investigative Center has looked at the issue of immigrants in the dairy industry. The first time was in 2009, based in part on the research by University of Wisconsin-Madison, that there were 40% of dairy workers were actually immigrants, which really shocked me back then in 2009. We decided to come back at it again because of the such concern over immigration and in immigration enforcement. And what we found in 2017 was that that there are no good statistics right now for Wisconsin dairy farms, but we found that there are many. It's almost certainly grown. And in the farms that we had visited, probably 3/4 of the workers on the large dairy farms are in fact immigrants. And so we found that farmers had for about 20 years been relying on very heavily on immigrant workers, and that workers were considered to be more reliable. Well, actually just available. Many of the farmers we talked to said that they simply could not find any U.S.-born workers who were willing to do the jobs on the farms.
Willing to do the jobs on the farms. This is very physical labor, not a day off type labor. And, you're paid slightly above minimum wage. Of course, then now we have really low milk prices, and that could impact wages.
Right. So farmers are concerned about that, and that is creating a crisis in the dairy industry. But they have been concerned for a long, long time about labor supply. That's been a critical problem. And we talked to both farmers and immigrant workers who'd been on farms for 15, 16 years, and they said in that time, not one U.S.-born person had answered an ad to come milk cows. It's just not a job that most people who have options will choose, and that includes family farmers. There are young people who grow up on dairy farms who decide, this is just too hard. I don't want to do it anymore, and that's why many farmers have to turn to immigrant labor.
John Rosenau, you talk with in your film, he's very transparent about it. If he didn't have his 10 undocumented workers, he wouldn't be able to farm. He wouldn't be able to milk his cows.
Yeah, we heard that from several farmers, and we heard that, and the workers understand that as well. They do understand that they are crucial to the operation of these farms, and as a result, in the last couple of years, we found that some of the wages are going up. Of course, there's a pinch now because of the low milk prices, but that, everybody sort of understands what's going on, but we have an immigration system that forces these folks to go around the law, despite what, they would like to go through the front door, just like H-2B visa holders who are agricultural workers. They would love to be in that position and also to be able to return home legally and safely. That's a big concern of a lot of the farmers as well. They understand how isolating and how terrible it can be for these folks to be separated from their own families for years, in fact, even decades.
Talking with D. Hall, managing editor at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, which put out a documentary exploring the rising tensions over undocumented dairy workers after the election of President Trump. Los Lecheros ends with this worker who goes back to Mexico, and you see them driving back, that they have everything, that all of the possessions in the truck, and the kids and the wife will be flying back, but there they go off into the distance, and you're thinking, well, so what is there once they cross the border, and if they're able to cross back?
Right. And that's always the concern, is not so much crossing back and going to Mexico to see their family, but being able to return to the United States. That is the wild card. That's the part that some workers are not willing to risk it, because it is a dangerous trip. It's an expensive trip. And there's no guarantee that they'll actually be able to make it to come back to their jobs. And so it's very poignant. Yeah, we did find actually in the course of other reporting, other workers who plan to return in part because of the negative attitudes that they're encountering here in the United States towards immigrants.
Let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Owen joining us from Wauwega. Hi, Owen.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, so I am a dairy farm employee. I work hand in hand with 8 other employees that are immigrant labor that came over here from Veracruz and Tabasco, Mexico. Do you understand that milk prices are so low because we have an oversupply of milk right now?
So, Owen, I want you just to flesh out your point. We have been talking about very low milk prices. What is your experience working with your coworkers on a dairy farm?
I'm 40 years old, and I've been farming since I was a kid. I grew up in Vermont. Small dairy farmers went out about 25 or 30 years ago, got replaced with larger and larger farms that used immigrant labor to fuel their cow milking and herd health responsibilities, which is 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I also participate in those portions of the business. The owners of these farms take a lot more liberties than they used to when they were smaller farmers, where they have an ability to become very wealthy and use government subsidies to become bigger and bigger and oversupply more and more milk at the hands of people who are not voters, who are not given the rights that other people that are citizens in this country have, and they're completely ignored by constituents, or they're not considered constituents of politicians, and politicians have ignored the fact that we're returning to a feudal society in agriculture because more than 40% of the workers aren't represented by our government.
Owen, thank you so much for bringing in your perspective and for bringing in the perspective of working on a farm. Dee, what are your thoughts there as these farms grow larger and larger?
Well, I think the point that he made about people being not represented by the government, I think that is sort of the entire point of the book you were just discussing, is that people are here, they're doing a needed job, and yet they are being forced to live a shadow life. They are afraid to drive. They're afraid to go to the store these days. They're afraid of being deported. In terms of the fueling the larger and larger farms, I think there are other economic factors going on there which have to do with the economy of the dairy industry. It has been consolidating for a long time. Whether the immigrant availability of immigrant labor is fueling that, it seems that it could be a factor. I don't know that it is the factor. But I think that the point that you've got 40% of the dairy workers or more, probably more, who really have to live this sort of secret life to accomplish a job that we all say that we want them to do and needs to be done.
Very quickly, in the few seconds we have left, what are you watching for here as you look at migrant workers on dairy farms in Wisconsin?
Well, there have been some efforts to legalize, make these, workers legal, and those haven't really gone anywhere. I think it's part of the larger picture. A couple of things. One, there's an overall rural labor shortage, and two, Congress has simply been unwilling to tackle this issue, and I don't see that changing right now.
Well, Dee, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Dee Hall is managing editor at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, which put out a documentary exploring those tensions over undocumented dairy workers. And earlier we heard from Julie Keller, the author of the new book, Milking in the Shadows, Migrants and Mobility in America's Dairyland. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.